5 o'clock on a Saturday. What the hell am I doing here? Chad? A woman appeared in his doorway. Brinkerhoff looked up. It was Midge Milken, Fontaine's internal security analyst. She was 60, slightly heavy, and, much to the puzzlement of Brinkerhoff, quite appealing. A consummate flirt and an ex-wife three times over, Midge prowled the six-room directorial suite with a saucy authority. She was sharp, intuitive, worked ungodly hours, and was rumored to know more about the NSA's inner workings than God himself. Damn, Brinkerhoff thought, eyeing her in her gray cashmere dress. Either I'm getting older or she's looking younger. Weekly reports, she smiled, waving a fanfold of paper. You need to check the figures. Brinkerhoff eyed her body. Figures look good from here. Really, Chad, she laughed. I'm old enough to be your mother. Don't remind me, he thought. Midge strode in and sidled up to his desk. I'm on my way out, but the director wants these compiled by the time he gets back from South America. That's Monday, bright and early. She dropped the printouts in front of him. What am I, an accountant? No, hun, you're a cruise director. Thought you knew that. So what am I doing crunching numbers? She ruffled his hair. You wanted more responsibility. Here it is. He looked up at her sadly. Midge, I have no life. She tapped her finger on the paper. This is your life, Chad Brinkerhoff. She looked down at him and softened. Anything I can get you before I go? He eyed her pleadingly and rolled his aching neck. My shoulders are tight. Midge didn't bite. Take an aspirin. He pouted. No back rub? She shook her head. Cosmopolitan says 2/3 of back rubs end in sex. Brinkerhoff looked indignant. Ours never do. Precisely, she winked. That's the problem. Midge. Night, Chad. She headed for the door. You're leaving? You know I'd stay, Midge said, pausing in the doorway. But I do have some pride. I just can't see playing second fiddle, particularly to a teenager. My wife's not a teenager, Brinkerhoff defended. She just acts like one. Midge gave him a surprised look. I wasn't talking about your wife. She battered her eyes innocently. I was talking about Carmen. She spoke the name with a thick Puerto Rican accent. Brinkerhoff's voice cracked slightly. Who? Carmen, in food services? Brinkerhoff felt himself flush. Carmen Huerta was a 27-year-old pastry chef who worked in the NSA commissary. Brinkerhoff had enjoyed a number of presumably secret after-hours flings with her in the stockroom. She gave him a wicked wink. Remember, Chad, Big Brother knows all. Big Brother? Brinkerhoff gulped in disbelief. Big Brother watches the stockrooms, too? Big Brother, or Brother, as Midge often called it, was a Centrex 333 that sat in a small closet-like space off the suite's central room. Brother was Midge's whole world. It received data from 148 closed-circuit video cameras, 399 electronic doors, 377 phone taps, and 212 freestanding bugs in the NSA complex. The directors of the NSA had learned the hard way that 26,000 employees were not only a great asset, but a great liability. Every major security breach in the NSA's history had come from within. It was Midge's job as internal security analyst to watch everything that went on within the walls of the NSA, including, apparently, the commissary stockroom. Brinkerhoff stood to defend himself, but Midge was already on her way out. Hands above the desk, she called over her shoulder. No funny stuff after I go. The walls have eyes. Brinkerhoff sat and listened to the sound of her heels fading down the corridor. At least he knew Midge would never tell. She was not without her weaknesses. Midge had indulged in a few indiscretions of her own, mostly wandering back rubs with Brinkerhoff. His thoughts turned back to Carmen. He pictured her lissome body, those dark thighs, That AM radio she played full blast. Hot San Juan salsa. He smiled. Maybe I'll drop by for a snack when I'm done. He opened the first printout. Crypto. Production/expenditure. His mood immediately lightened. Midge had given him a freebie. The crypto report was always a piece of cake. Technically, he was supposed to compile the whole thing, but the only figure the director ever asked for was the MCD, the mean cost per decryption. The MCD represented the estimated amount it cost Translator to break a single code. As long as the figure was below $1,000 per code, Fontaine didn't flinch. A grand a pop, Brinkerhoff chuckled. Our tax dollars at work. As he began plowing through the document and checking the daily MCDs, images of Carmen Huerta smearing herself with honey and confectioner's sugar began playing in his head. 30 seconds later, he was almost done. The crypto data was perfect, as always. But just before moving on to the next report, something caught his eye. At the bottom of the sheet, the last MCD was off. The figure was so large that it had carried over into the next column and made a mess of the page. Brinkerhoff stared at the figure in shock. 999,999,999. He gasped. $1 billion? The images of Carmen vanished. $1 billion code? Brinkerhoff sat there a minute, paralyzed. Then in a burst of panic, he raced out into the hallway. Midge! Come back! Chapter 44. Phil Chartroukian stood fuming in the SysSec lab. Strathmore's words echoed in his head. Leave now. That's an order. He kicked the trash can and swore in the empty lab. Diagnostic my ass. Since when does the deputy director bypass Gauntlet's filters? The SysSecs were well paid to protect the computer system at the NSA, and Chartroukian had learned that there were only two job requirements: be utterly brilliant and exhaustively paranoid. Hell, he cursed. This isn't paranoia. The fucking run monitor's reading 18 hours. It was a virus. Chartroukian could feel it. There was little doubt in his mind what was going on. Strathmore had made a mistake by bypassing Gauntlet's filters, and now he was trying to cover it up with some half-baked story about a diagnostic. Chartroukian wouldn't have been quite so edgy had Translator been the only concern. But it wasn't. Despite its appearance, the great decoding beast was by no means an island. Although the cryptographers believed Gauntlet was constructed for the sole purpose of protecting their code-breaking masterpiece, the SysSecs understood the truth. The Gauntlet filters served a much higher god, the NSA's main databank. The history behind the databank's construction had always fascinated Chartroukian. Despite the efforts of the Department of Defense to keep the Internet to themselves in the late 1970s, it was too useful a tool not to attract the public sector. Eventually, universities pried their way on. Shortly after that came the commercial servers. The floodgates opened, and the public poured in. By the early 90s, the government's once secure Internet was a congested wasteland of public email and cyber porn. Following a number of unpublicized yet highly damaging computer infiltrations at the Office of Naval Intelligence, it became increasingly clear that government secrets were no longer safe on computers connected to the burgeoning Internet. The President, in conjunction with the Department of Defense, passed a classified decree that would fund a new, totally secure government network to replace the tainted Internet and function as a link between U.S. intelligence agencies. To prevent further computer pilfering of government secrets, all sensitive data was relocated to one highly secure location, the newly constructed NSA data bank, the Fort Knox of U.S. intelligence data. Literally millions of the country's most classified photos, tapes, documents, and videos were digitized and transferred to the immense storage facility, and then the hard copies were destroyed. The data bank was protected by a triple-layer power relay and a tiered digital backup system. It was also 214 feet underground to shield it from magnetic fields and possible explosions. Activities within the control room were designated Top Secret Umbra, the country's highest level of security. The secrets of the country had never been safer. This impregnable databank now housed blueprints for advanced weaponry, witness protection lists, aliases of field agents, detailed analyses and proposals for covert operations. The list was endless. There would be no more black bag jobs damaging U.S. intelligence. Of course, the officers of the NSA realized that stored data had value only if it was accessible. The real coup of the databank was not getting the classified data off the streets. It was making it accessible only to the correct people. All stored information had a security rating and, depending on the level of secrecy, was accessible to government officials on a compartmentalized basis. A submarine commander could dial in and check the NSA's most recent satellite photos of Russian ports, but he would not have access to the plans for an anti-drug mission in South America. CIA analysts could access histories of known assassins, but could not access launch codes reserved for the president. CISSECs, of course, had no clearance for the information in the databank, but they were responsible for its safety. Like all large databanks, from insurance companies to universities, the NSA facility was constantly under attack by computer hackers trying to sneak a peek at the secrets waiting inside. But the NSA security programmers were the best in the world. No one had ever come close to infiltrating the NSA databank, and the NSA had no reason to think anybody ever would. Inside the CISSEC lab, Chartroukian broke into a sweat trying to decide whether to leave. Trouble in translator meant trouble in the databank, too. Strathmore's lack of concern was bewildering. Everyone knew that translator and the NSA main databank were inextricably linked. Each new code, once broken, was fired from crypto through 450 yards of fiber optic cable to the NSA databank for safekeeping. The sacred storage facility had limited points of entry, and translator was one of them. Gauntlet was supposed to be the impregnable threshold guardian, and Strathmore had bypassed it. Chartroukian could hear his own heart pounding. Translator's been stuck 18 hours. The thought of a computer virus entering translator and then running wild in the basement of the NSA proved too much. "I've got to report this," he blurted aloud. In a situation like this, Chartroukian knew there was only one person to call, the NSA's senior CISSEC officer, the short-fused 400-pound computer guru who had built Gauntlet. His nickname was Jabba. He was a demigod at the NSA, roaming the halls, putting out virtual fires, and cursing the feeble-mindedness of the inept and the ignorant. Chartroukian knew that as soon as Jabba heard Strathmore had bypassed Gauntlet's filters, all hell would break loose. Too bad, he thought. I've got a job to do. He grabbed the phone and dialed Jabba's 24-hour cellular. Chapter 45. David Becker wandered aimlessly down Avenida del Cid and tried to collect his thoughts. Muted shadows played on the cobblestones beneath his feet. The vodka was still with him. Nothing about his life seemed in focus at the moment. His mind drifted back to Susan, wondering if she'd gotten his phone message yet. Up ahead, a Seville transit bus screeched to a halt in front of a bus stop. Becker looked up. The bus's doors cranked open, but no one disembarked. The diesel engine roared back to life, but just as the bus was pulling out, three teenagers appeared out of a bar up the street and ran after it, yelling and waving. The engines wound down again, and the kids hurried to catch up. 30 yards behind them, Becker stared in utter incredulity. His vision was suddenly focused, but he knew what he was seeing was impossible. It was a one-in-a-million chance. I'm hallucinating. But as the bus doors opened, the kids crowded around to board. Becker saw it again. This time, he was certain. Clearly illuminated in the haze of the corner streetlight, he'd seen her. The passengers climbed on, and the bus's engines revved up again. Becker suddenly found himself at a full sprint, the bizarre image fixed in his mind. Black lipstick, wild eyeshadow, and that hair, spiked straight up in three distinctive spires, red, white, and blue.